está cerrada con tres candados.
This past January, I visited the U.S.-Mexico border between El Paso and Juarez, where I interviewed various artists of the area. Paula López, a performance artist, described the experience of border crossing.
You know, when you walk through, you're walking in a cage, right? So the fact that you're fenced in as you walk across, that you see the fences and the militarization of the border, that you see the desecration of the river, the metaphor of that with the femicide rate of women in Juarez. On one hand, I feel like it's the most profound experience of your life to be standing in a space like that. And on the other hand, it's like the most mundane, everyday experience.
When I crossed the Rio Grande, I was, as Paula described, in a cage. I felt monitored, bound by the metal surrounding me. It was surreal and shocking to be in Mexico in less than 5 minutes, to go from so much wealth to so much poverty in such a short amount of time. The crossing marked me psychologically and corporeally. I felt my body, alongside my politics, change as I crossed a mistreated river. The degradation of health and the environment that border imperialism has caused is palpable. Border imperialism, a concept introduced by author and activist Harsha Walia, is the extension and imposition of Western rule through the construction of an artificial border to maintain unequal economic, social, and political power over former colonies. The U.S.-Mexico border perpetuates social and political harm on the people of Mexico and their U.S. descendants. It is a type of inescapable ecology, as Linda Nash describes, one not only defined by history of industrialization, but also by a story of contestation of colonial powers, socially constructed as a geography that determines otherness. In 2004, the Sierra Club reported that only 12% of the 8 million tons of hazardous waste produced in the maquiladoras, the foreign-owned manufacturing industries along the border, is properly treated and disposed, while 70% of it remains within Mexico's borders. Solid waste production, water pollution, and urban air pollution have grown at staggering rates in Mexico since the implementation of NAFTA. Scientists have produced a plethora of evidence to show how heavy pesticide usage and maquiladora pollution have been connected to increased threats of cancer, asthma, and respiratory diseases, as well as a number of serious birth defects near the border. So how is this environmental injustice allowed? First and foremost, it's enabled by the 1993 Trilateral Trade Agreement between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, known as NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. NAFTA has facilitated the process of outsourcing to Mexico, and Mexico's environment and people were, and are, treated as collateral damage. The thing is, NAFTA is now a 24-year-old program that most Americans have learned to live with, and we pretty much had forgotten about it until Trump brought it back up. Let's call the whole thing off. About a year ago, Trump threatened to pull out of what he calls the worst trade deal in the history of the world. Mexico and Canada quickly jumped to convince him to renegotiate the treaty instead. Trump believes that NAFTA is the reason for job loss in the manufacturing sector of the U.S., though economists have found that it actually boosted our agricultural sector, as well as other industries such as auto manufacturing. But from a purely environmental perspective, scrapping the treaty may be the best outcome for everyday people on the planet, assuming that as industry and trade go down, so will its pollution. U.S. environmentalists are torn on whether to support Trump in this decision or advocate against him while he pushes for climate-unfriendly policy otherwise. So as NAFTA 2.0 undergoes renegotiations between the three countries, we can postulate. If Trump were to repeal NAFTA, what would that mean for the environment, and more largely, the health of those communities whose lives have been transformed through liberalized trade? So while U.S. actors are torn in their efforts, we will focus on those whose lives have already been changed by the changing tides of the free trade agreement and how they have built their own bridges across waters to surpass those environmental hazards.
Environmentalists and public health actors were some of NAFTA's biggest opponents in 93, predicting that American industries would take advantage of Mexico's unregulated environmental laws, that the border area would become a polluter's paradise. Environmentalist voices were so strong at the time that it actually pushed President Clinton to only accept NAFTA if it had environmental provisions, resulting in the creation of the CEC, or the Commission for Environmental Cooperation, whose job it was to enforce that each country uphold their environmental responsibilities.
We are determined that dynamic trade cannot lead to environmental despoilation. We will seek new institutional arrangements to ensure that trade leaves the world cleaner than before.
Though the original NAFTA agreement included these environmental add-ons that appeared progressive, those provisions mostly existed on paper. And the three-country agreement has done little environmental good and a whole lot of bad. The birth defects here are because of the pollution, especially the waste left by Metales y Derivados. It is an abandoned factory with 6,000 tons of lead slag left exposed to the open air. That was a quote from a resident of Chilpancingo, a border settlement of Tijuana, Mexico, featured in the documentary called Maquilapolis, which tells the story of the health effects caused by the lead pollution from an abandoned maquiladora in the area that was never properly cleaned up. Children there are born without fingernails, suffer from skin rashes, and there have been various cases of anencephaly, where the babies are born without a brain and die. In Chilpancingo, many laborers are single women, raising families and working in these very polluted, toxic environments of the maquiladora, so the harmful exposures go from work to the home as well. They tell the stories of labor exploitation and environmental injustice faced by their communities as maquiladora waste is led into their water systems, soil, and homes. All their chemicals end up in our neighborhood. People here have gotten sores on their legs and feet, and we think they're from the water. Despite the ways that Chilpancingo women and other border communities have suffered from the exploitative maquiladora industry, NAFTA still has the support of the majority of Mexicans. Mexico's government is keen to maintain preferential access to the U.S. and Canada, where nearly 85% of its exports are shipped. So when Trump threatened to pull out, Mexican government negotiators went to Washington to fight tooth and nail to save the trade agreement. Contrast that with the thousands of Mexican farmers and workers who took to the streets back in September demanding the deal be scrapped. Mexico's small, mainly indigenous farmers still feel the effects of the painful competition they blame on the free trade deal. This anti-NAFTA sentiment by Mexican farmers has actually been afoot since the signing of NAFTA. The Zapatista uprising of January 1, 1994 drew international attention to the plight of Mexico's indigenous farmers, highlighting their opposition to the trade agreement. While U.S. and Mexican government officials argued that NAFTA would create jobs in Mexico and reduce illegal immigration to the U.S., the rebels warned that NAFTA, through its new economic policies, would marginalize the working-class Mexicans. Far from promoting Mexican prosperity, NAFTA devastated rural livelihoods, increased unemployment, and accelerated migration to the U.S. For example, the small subsistence farmers of Chiapas, the region of the Zapatista uprising, suffered extreme economic hardship as a consequence of declining corn prices and the elimination of government subsidies after NAFTA was implemented. They couldn't compete with the subsidized corn industry in the U.S., resulting in economically depressed homes and ultimately leading to extreme food insecurity throughout Chiapas. I want to emphasize how Zapatistas refused to call their movement indigenous and repeatedly emphasized that trade liberalization and neoliberalism would be a problem for the entire nation. The indigenous, the poor, for the working classes and disadvantaged minority groups as well. Rather, they were claiming a voice in Mexican governance, calling for a place at the table where social and environmental decisions over economic resources for indigenous and working class people were made. Mexican workers, peasants, and popular forces took to the streets in 1994 yelling, "Todos somos indios," we are all native. Back in Chilpancingo, the maquiladora workers and residents took matters into their own hands. They reached out to the San Diego Environmental Health Coalition, who teamed up with the women of the town to perform local health surveys. Collectively, finally with the survey evidence, they appealed to the Mexican government to clean up the abandoned maquiladora. In 1998, the Environmental Coalition and the community filed a petition with NAFTA's environmental agency. In 2002, the CEC, the agency, concluded the site represented a, quote, grave risk to human health. Yet the commission has no authority or resources to clean up the toxic sites. It took a decade of organizing and advocacy by the coalition and the community before the signing of a landmark cleanup in 2004 between the Mexican and U.S. government. The cleanup was completed in 2008. We want to affirm that Tijuana is nobody's trash can. Gloria Anzaldúa, in her essay, Now Let Us Shift, writes about people of indigenous descent living in communities suffering from the impacts of border militarization and rising levels of toxicity connected to the neocolonial extractive industries of the borderlands. In her essay, Anzaldúa reveals her lifelong struggles with diabetes and other endocrine-related illnesses. She grew up in the 1950s working in South Texas agricultural fields and traced her illnesses to the chemicals encountered by workers who constantly come into contact with herbicides and pesticides in the field, and also to the water from the Rio Grande, as it was apparently contaminated with arsenic from silver mines located upriver. In facing her illness, Anzaldúa proposed what she calls a new tribalism, an identity that reimagines conventional categories of class, color, and ethnicity, and moves towards a collective transnational identity. New tribalism seeks allies to begin building spiritual and political communities that struggle for personal growth and social justice. What Anzaldúa calls for is similar to what scholar Phil Brown and colleagues call for when describing the criteria needed for embodied health movements in their book, Contested Illnesses. Embodied health movements are political movements that foster collaboration between disease sufferers, scientists, environmentalists, and allies to bring attention and advocacy to the victims of neglected diseases and populations. And Phil Brown and colleagues argue that the most important basic mechanism needed for mobilization is a politicized collective identity, an illness identity linked to broader social inequality as the cause of disease. Perhaps Anzaldúa's new tribalism could be that politicized collective identity. This identity is created by sharing histories, forging bonds across race, gender, and other lines, as the Zapatistas did, as the women of Chilpancingo facilitated. Anzaldúa writes, "This internal work, coupled to the commitment to struggle for social transformation, changes your relationship to your body, and in turn, to other bodies. And when that happens, you change the world." A new tribalism could lead Mexicans, indigenous peoples, and Americans to begin a health movement, to build bridges across the Rio Grande, and to move towards fighting for environmental health justice on the border. So if Trump were to scrap NAFTA, could the unlikely winner here be the environment, border communities, and the Rio Grande? Trump more recently is attempting to make Mexican immigration control a condition of the new NAFTA trade deal. This past April, Trump threatened to scrap NAFTA if it doesn't include the building of a wall. The New Yorker writer Nick Pomgarden writes about how a wall would only worsen the environmental situation of the Rio Grande. It would endanger species, alter ecological life by blocking water flows. It would be, as he says, devastating to life on an already threatened river. Perhaps a One Health perspective would have to come into play if the wall were built, where we'd have to ensure the collaboration across environmental, ecological, veterinary, and medical disciplines to ensure the well-being of our lands, animals, and border communities. Current NAFTA negotiations don't include environmentalist perspectives, despite U.S. environmental lobbying efforts. So once again, it seems whatever negotiators agree to, there's little hope tough environmental standards will be included or implemented. The thing is, from its commencement, NAFTA was written to support corporate polluters, not climate-impacted border communities, and Trump will continue that legacy. But, as we see, it's really local community organizing that's at the forefront of the environmental justice movement against NAFTA. We look to these communities, the Zapatistas, and their grassroots organizing for ways to circumvent the limitations imposed by these imperialistic, nationally regulated policies. We look to the women in Chilpancingo as inspiration, as people, scientists, NGOs, and activists were able to build transnational alliances that extend past national trade agreements and create new systems of community and exchange. They have built their own bridges over the messy waters of NAFTA. We look to Anzaldúa to form a new tribalism identity, to create an embodied health movement against environmental injustices caused by these physical, environmental, and psychological borders to, as artist Paula Lopez puts it, imagine otherwise.
think is very important to generate spaces where we can create together things that no one individually can imagine. And I think that that is the way that we can get out of this moment where we are so stuck.